Accession number 17623, Henry Watson, Reel 1.
Mr. Watson, Reel 1. When and where you were born, Mr. Watson?
In Haydon Bridge. Springfield, Haydon Bridge. November the 18th, 1918.
And what kind of a community is or was Haydon Bridge?
Well, just a little small place. There used to be few mines around the place, and there's quite a few people. They were all drift mines, but they're all closed down and have been for many years. There was very little work in the place. The population, I think, was about 2,000. That was the all.
What did your father do?
He was a marine engineer, and he retired from the sea when my sister was born in 1921, and he started the little garage that you've just walked through. A few years ago, I rebuilt it. And he was a steam engineer, of course, and he more or less had the job to learn. A motor mechanic, a motor engineer, it was quite a different... Well, it was something totally different. But I had an uncle who was served his time as a motor mechanic, and had been through the First World War on transport, and he started with my father with this garage, so between them they got themselves a little business going. They started in 21, and then 1925, I think it was, this branched out from the private cars to the commercials, and went on working for Northumberland County Council, Hexham Rural District Council, leading stuff from the quarry for road maintenance. I don't think there's very much more to be said about the village.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
One sister. She died 3 years ago.
What are your memories of growing up as a child in the village?
Well, first of all, that building out there is there. That's the school. That was the school. So I didn't have to far to travel to school. It's lying bare till about 5 to 9, then go like the clappers up to the school to get in before 9 o'clock. But there was, I think it was about 200 or something kids went to the school, but now it's all split up. It's one part now. It's not junior, it's the next stage. They go to a little kindergarten school first, and then they go to this school till a certain age, then they go to
secondary school?
No, they go to Allendale, to the next stage, and then when they're 13 they go to the high school, the other side of the village, and then they leave school or go to college.
So in your day it was an all age, you started there and you finished?
Just
there?
You went there and finished there. I started when I was four and a half, and instead of leaving when I was 14.
What are your memories of school like? Was it a good education that you felt you got?
Oh, it was a good enough education, but I'm afraid I was a lazy. I just like my son it was, couldn't just quite see the point of it all. Now he's finding out he should have done a little bit better. He could have done, but he's like me, he's a bit lazy.
Any teachers that stand out in your mind?
Not really. They were all just to W.W. Ridley was the headmaster, and a gentleman by the name of Mr. Stronach, he was the only other male teacher at the school. The rest were all lady teachers.
Corporal punishment dished out?
Oh, you got plenty of that dished out, yeah. So you just had to look twice the wrong way and you got belted.
Did you get involved in school games, school sports?
Oh, sports, yes. Football, cricket. And, I love running. It'd be glory if they were having a long-distance run.
So your father, as you say, had this business, so that would keep him pretty well occupied, did it not?
Oh yes. Kept
long hours.
Uh-huh. We used to live at the other side of the river, a quarter of a mile away from the road, but the garage that he had, the land where the garage was, belonged to the Hayden Hotel, and the Hayden Hotel was bankrupt, and he either had to buy the land that the garage stood on and the land in behind it, or get offered and go back to sea. Well, he didn't want to go back to sea because my mother had just had his sister. So he sold the house at the other side of the bridge and bought all this lot, and we're still here.
Did the church play a part in your family life?
Well, I used to go to, I was in the choir and the Sunday school, and you have to go to church on Sunday, of course. I never got to the stage of reading the lesson or anything like that.
Did you get involved with the Boy Scouts or the Boys Brigade?
Boy Scouts, yes. I was in the Scouts until I was almost 16 before I left them.
Did you enjoy life with the Scouts?
Yes, I did. It stood me in good stead, the Boy Scout movement.
In what way?
Being independent, being self-sufficient. Being able to manage on your own, and little knick-knacks that you learned that came in useful, especially in the prison camp, when you had no one to lay your bed down for you, you had to just get into it.
Did you have to buy your own uniform for the Scouts?
We would have to, yes, but that would be my mother's job to buy that. I can remember getting it, of course, but as to how much it cost her, I wouldn't know.
There would obviously be a disciplined aspect to the Scouts. And
oh, yes.
Been in so long, you must have at least taken to that.
Well, they had the Scout Master. Well, he stood to attention and he called him sir, and he was inclined to be... He copied another fellow that was in earlier, who was in... tried to emulate the army style a little bit. We weren't supposed to be army trained, but it just tended to go that way. You know, jumped to attention and left, right, third, and you did it in unison. You didn't just shuffle around. And just a smart body of lads.
You had a basic kind of, a basic drill?
Yes. Not a lot of drill, of course. There was, you soon got sick of that. But there's all the other activities that you went in for. Camping was took quite a bit of time up, you know, preparing and doing things for the camp. And I had an interest in that, because one of our wagons used to take the lads to camp always and bring them back. So I had a good seat on the wagon.
Hayden Bridge is surrounded by the countryside.
Oh, yes.
So country life must have been part of your growing up.
Oh, it's country. I mean, you're right in the middle. You're 28 miles to Newcastle and you're 32 to Carlisle. So you're right in the middle, on the Tyne.
The community itself, was it a closely knit, supportive community?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was. Yeah. all these little places like that can incline to be clannish, in that you're all right if you're inside, but if you're outside, you just don't get inside. Keep you out.
When you what age were you when you left school?
15.
And did you come straight into the business?
Yeah, yes.
How did your father use you in those days? Had you just start at the bottom in the business and work your way through?
Well, it was hardly like that. There was only my father and my uncle in the business, and with going on to the commercials, he was away most of the time driving a wagon, and I was in the garage with my father until such times that I was old enough to drive a wagon. Then I got kicked out onto the road with doing that until the army commandeered it.
Was it a secure living, the garage business? A good living, a comfortable living?
I wouldn't say that. Yeah, struggled a bit.
Well, bad periods as well as...
Oh, there was a lot of bad pain in those days.
Did the general strike and that kind of period, did that affect the
Well,
business?
The general strike, we were in, the wagons were employed, what we had. I can't remember how many, two or three. They used to lead the milk down to Newcastle, Gateshead. And that could be a bit of a hazard, trying to get in with the milk, because the strikers used to be a little bit upset about us going in. Well, the milk was for the kids, and I think that was the only reason I ever got in, because there was the kids were going to get the milk.
These would be the pickets to ensure that the strike
was a
success.
Used to stop on the pickets were always on a hilltop when old wagons went chug 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 up the hill, and when they were just about knocked in, the step don't stop them.
We, obviously, you worked with your father then through the rest of your adolescence and into adulthood. What did a young, growing adolescent chap like yourself do for leisure in those days? Or was there much leisure?
Well, as I said, the business was never very brilliant as far as money goes, and I'm afraid I wasn't on a very big wage. So... whilst I was working on the wagon, I used to get finished about 5 o'clock, washed and changed, across to the cinema, where I had a job, spare-time job, as operator in the projection box. And I got about, I think it was 25 bob a week I got for that. That was extra. And then at 10 o'clock, when the picture's finished, I scoot down, get changed again, get the wagon out the way to a dance and round the area. I'm still on with the dances. I still run them, but I'm afraid I couldn't manage 6 nights a week now like I used to.
Did the money that you earned was handed to your mother?
Pardon?
The money that you did earn, both in the garage and in your part-time job, did you hand that all over to your mother and get a pocket money back?
No. I got 10 bob a week off my father for a week's wage, driving a wagon, and I hadn't enough to... Well, I didn't smoke, I didn't drink, still don't. When I took this job on at the picture hall, just to get a bob or two, because I was keen on music, and I wanted a piano accordion, which eventually saved up enough to buy one. And I had it until the war broke up. Well, the war, I went overseas and then I flogged it. So there wasn't a great lot of money to spare.
In the 1930s, were you aware that things weren't right on the continent?
Oh, yes.
Was it a part of... the general conversation about
what amongst the local, isn't the kids, it was always when the war starts. I mean, that was the thing. When the war starts, what are you going into? Well, it wasn't what you wanted to go into, it was what you got put into.
Do you recall what you were doing on the morning that the announcement was made by the Prime Minister that war had been declared?
I remember at the time, but I couldn't tell you what day it was or anything like that. But I thought, well, it wasn't a very good thing. I didn't fancy that at all. Because a lot of my pals, they joined the Territorials a few months prior to the war breaking out. Because if you joined the Territorials, you didn't have to go on the, what do you call the...
It was a militia scheme.
That's it, yeah. So I said, I'll just go on the militia scheme and get it away from home and get a change and see how life, what life's like on the other side of the road. But I did get called up with what would have been the third batch of militia, which was in October 39.
And you hadn't been with them before that?
Oh, no.
This was your calling up. What's the process of calling them? How did they do it?
As far as I know, they just got a paper saying attend some drill hall or other in Newcastle, I forget the name of it, for a medical with a view to going into the army. So I went down there and went through this medical and were more concerned with being fit rather than join the army or not. So then after that, I took the wagon that I was driving. It got requisitioned by the army. And I took it over to a race course. What's the name of it? Just down the A1.
Was it the Catrick race
course? Catrick race course, that's it. We took the wagon to take the wagon to Catrick, and I was quite prepared to stay in the army then. But I asked one of the officers there, he says, "This wagon will be in France at the end of the week." So he says, "Just go home until you get your calling up papers." I think I was home about another 3 weeks and they landed.
How many wagons did your father have then?
I think he had about five. I think we had five then.
And then you got this requisition notice from the forces that they wanted one of them.
They wanted the latest one, which wasn't actually the latest. There was another one, but they mustn't have known about it. That was the one I had. And it was last seen going into the dock at Dunkirk by a local lad. Somebody pushed a few lads, pushing it into the dock. Still had my name on the side.
And of course, your father would have no choice.
It had to go. Well, so what sort of recompense he got? Well, he wasn't going to discuss that with me. That wasn't no to do with me.
Well, in the October, then you were in effect conscripted.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go?
Aldershot.
Had you said what you would like to join? Did you get the opportunity to say where you would like to go?
No.
And they took you straight down to Aldershot. What was it down there? A training depot of some kind?
Yeah, I went to Parsons Barracks, Aldershot, for the basic training. And there was quite a few, the Queen's ex-soldiers, you know, the time was expired, regulars. They were the ones that put us through basis, learned us to slope arms by numbers, etc. And
do you recall the day you arrived there and the initial treatment they gave you?
Well, I just thought my brothers had all come at once.
you were through the gates and you were in the army.
They were in the army, and everybody else was in the army when you looked around.
Did you get a uniform immediately on arriving?
Not the same day, but within a very short time.
What was the accommodation like that you were put into?
There were big wooden huts. They were a permanent hut. And the beds, they gave us what we called camp beds, you know, the canvas and wood that folded up. And with strict instructions that if we broke one of those beds, we're in trouble. But if we broke one, don't worry, just bring it round and we'll give you another one. In other words, they had a lot and they didn't want them. They were wanting to get rid of them. So I'm afraid if we had a bed lasted two nights, it was doing well. Just away around the quarter stores with a broken bed the next morning. What happened? I fell out of bed or something.
What were you sleeping on? What mattress?
Mattress.
It was a mattress.
It was a mattress. On.
It wasn't the three biscuits.
No, we had the three biscuits on the metal ones.
How many would there be in the hut?
There was approximately 30 in the hut. And one lance corporal of the Queen's in charge. And there was the draft that I was in, they were all from the north. I think the whole lot of us had all travelled down from the central. So I'm afraid we were more or less unwanted down there. We were Geordies.
Was there a language difficulty?
Oh, I'd say language difficulty, but there was a bit of aggro. Because I'm afraid a Geordie and a Southerner, a Londoner, didn't take much to start an argument. Geordies and the Jocks used to fight.
Were the huts heated in any way?
They were heated from boilers in a boiler shed, like cellars. There was one for each hut. Out of bounds to us, but some caretakers used to attend to that.
But were they quite warm and comfortable?
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
How did you keep the hut clean? What was your duty there?
It was just, it had to be kept clean, and that was it. There was one on fatigues that day, and it's his job to have that room spotless for inspection. It was a case of, is there any dust there? And if there is, God help you.
Where were the latrines in relation to the hut?
Take two huts separated by another unit, and that was the latrine. Baths and the latrines.
And was it your responsibility to keep those clean?
Oh,
as
yes,
well?
Yes, yes. He kept the whole lot clean.
Presumably shared between the two.
Shared
huts.
Between the two.
With the hot and cold water?
Hot with cold water, yes.
Eating facilities, where were those in relation to where you were?
There was a big mess hall that you marched across to forget your meals, file in single file past the canteen counter, and you collected your meal and went and sat at a table, a wood scrubbed table with a chair or a form, and the group was quite good.
What kind of food were you getting?
Well, four square meals a day, or no supper, breakfast, dinner, tea. You could have cocoa if you wanted it later on, at 8 o'clock or something like that, which nearly everybody was out by that time.
What would you get for breakfast?
Sausage, bacon, mashed potatoes, fried potatoes, just a cooked breakfast.
And lunch, or your main meal in the middle of the day?
Well, I can hardly remember what it was, but we used to get one day in the week, liver, put potatoes and veg with it, in some form of pudding or other, sweet after the main meal. Tea was a cooked meal again, and that was the end of the cookhouse till the next day.
You arrived there on whatever day it was, And obviously they would be waiting for you. What did they do with you immediately?
Just took you in a truck and took you to the parson's barracks.
And at the barracks, what happened then?
Well, there was a bit of documentation to be gone through. Who were you? Where did you come from? And what did you want there? And the usual army questions.
Was it a general service unit, or were you with a regiment or corps at that point?
No, it was an ordnance corps unit. It was the Parsons Barracks, they called it. It was the main depot, main ordnance depot. There was the field workshops, which was a little march away. We used to get sent down there occasionally on fatigues, and there was everything, plus everything else in there.
But initially you were just getting the normal kind of infantry basic drill, were you?
We're getting basic drill, yes.
Well, when they issued you with the uniform, what did they give you?
A whole lot. There's only one lad didn't get his uniform. He came from Chesley Street. Frank, surname's gone, but Frank was a big lad. I mean a big lad. And when I came away from Aldershot, Frank still hadn't got his uniform. Couldn't get a one big enough for him.
They'd have to make one special.
They would have to, yes.
And you got the usual blouse, trousers,
yes,
shirts and so on.
Yes.
What did you feel like putting them on? Feel like a soldier?
Well, what's a soldier feel like? Just something fresh. We did our basic training there. And for so many weeks, it wasn't many, 3 weeks or something. And then we got sent down to the workshops at Farnborough.
Before we come to that, the 3 weeks you were, what basic training did you actually get?
Well, just ordinary drill. Just the drill movements and the speed, tempo, what have you, which didn't quite match up with the DLI.
Did they give you a weapon?
I had a rifle, yes.
They gave you a rifle?
But no ammunition. Oh, no.
And it was just, as you say, basic marching drill.
Yes.
Weapons drill, rifle drill and so forth.
Well, it was weaponry drill in as much as there was Bren guns. How to strip them down and look after them and fire them and mortars. No, didn't get onto them. Grenades, hand grenades. It was just pull the pin and let it go.
So it must have been pretty busy for you, keeping you
there.
Oh,
my God, I've had a minute's rest. They're going like the clappers once you start it, and the days kept changing to different parts of your uniform, you see. PT, and you go on to weapon training, and you're belting bayonets and what have you, and oh, you were very, very busy.
Were you given the Ordnance Corps badge immediately you got there as part of your...
No, I think we had to go and buy that at one of the shops.
Was there a canteen on the camp?
Yes, a Naffy canteen.
And presumably that was an evening place you went to in the evening?
Not unless you had no money left. You'd go into town and go to the YMCA or someplace like that.
You're allowed out pretty early here?
Yes.
But again, you presume you have to be pretty smart before they allowed you out.
Oh, you had to be in your uniform. You had to be dressed, and when you passed the guard room, they checked you over to make sure you were reasonably attired.
And what were you doing when you went into Aldershot? Where were you going? And
well, we didn't know
what
that.
What leisure activities did you have in the town?
Well, just whatever you made. Went to the pictures, went to the YMCA or some other canteen or other.
Essentially, it's a military town.
It's a military town, you see. Most of the lads went to the pubs.